Well, I think you've talked about the most important methods. Basically, if I can recap from what I understand, the most important tenets your method is the total immersion into the language and also interacting with the language in a realistic and practical way. But another thing that you've actually mentioned on your blog and we talked about a little bit is you do have some smaller tactics that aren't as broad that you've used to help remember words and stuff. And I think this was particularly interesting for me because I've written a lot about this method, which I haven't used for language learning that much, but I've used a lot on other academic subjects where you talk about one of the techniques you use for remembering words by linking in ideas, the vocabulary of the word, the way the word is structured to other ideas in your head. And you wrote down actually an article about that on your blog. Maybe you could talk just briefly about that tactic that you use before to remember words.
Yeah, certainly. There's actually two tactics I use. I haven't talked about the second one on the blog yet, but the first one for remembering vocabulary, because I don't have photographic memory. I can't just see a word and know what the translation is and remember it forever. So the one technique I use, which of course I didn't come up with, it's something lots of people do. And I saw in your book, you call it visualization, I think, where you're linking an image with lots of animations and emotions and things like that. So, for example, you would have seen on the post that you referenced that when I wanted to learn that the word for train station in French was gare, G-A-R, I thought, well, what does that look like? There's nothing in English called gare, just G-A-R. So the closest word I can think of was Garfield. So instead of just imagining Garfield sitting in a train station, which has no impact on you and you will forget that, I made a little story. I imagined that he has to catch a train to Italy to go to a lasagna eating competition, and he's running into the train station. I imagine a particular train station in Valencia that I used to live in, to make it very visual. He runs into it, he looks at it up at the timetable, he sees his train's just about to leave, and he's dashing to it, and he's a big fat cat, so you can see him sweating and panting. And I got this extremely graphic and amusing image of Garfield running through a train station. So whenever I the best part of this is it works in two ways, because if you want to really learn vocabulary in a language, it's not just about recognizing but also reproducing the word. So even if I always recognize that gare is going to be train station, if I want to say the word for train station, that's a lot harder because you have to produce it yourself. Whereas this image links both of them directly. So when I see the word gare, I remember, I've got Garfield, and Garfield was running through a train station. And when I'm thinking of a train station, then I see the image of Garfield, and that gives me the French word. So that's one thing, is to link it up. And then sometimes you have to be very imaginative of how you come up with those words. The other example I gave in that post was the Czech word for first, which is pirvni, P-R-V-N-I. And I just kind of wrote that word out. It doesn't sound like anything in English. So just thought about it for a few seconds. Now, at first, I can tell you, if you haven't applied this to languages, when you try this method at first, it does take a while. You need a whole minute to think of a word, and it seems completely impractical because there's hundreds of thousands of words to learn in a language. But when you do this, it's the kind of process that your brain learns how to apply quicker in future. So even if the first couple of times it takes you a whole minute to make this story, this graphical image in your mind, after a couple of times, you're starting to do it in a couple of seconds, and it starts to become a very practical means of learning new vocabulary. So pirvni, I just looked at it and I saw pro van, and I thought of this professional van competition in the Olympics that I just won, and had all of this. I actually wrote a huge description of it, and people say it's ridiculous because it's their description took me about 10 minutes to actually write on the post. But in reality, it only took me about 5 seconds to come up with that image. So, and this is not something I've come up with, but it's just one of the ways that I've applied to learning vocabulary, which anybody can do for learning a huge amount of words.
That's a great suggestion. And actually, you really draw on the techniques I've talked about in holistic learning, the book Learn More, Study Less, and some of the other things I've written about. And the most interesting thing I found after writing the book and compiling it together is that even though very few people I found are writing about, that some people write about specific tactics that are sort of holistic, but assembling them all together, I've found very few people who've assembled them all together. But when I actually talk about it, there's actually a lot of people who are already doing it. So I'm glad that it's I'm not the only one who's advocating these kind of ideas. And I think you're exactly right that you spend a little bit more time, especially if you're not used to doing it initially to create the image, but you're really wiring it in your brain so that you don't have to learn it again as much. And I've been very lucky with my language learning because French is very similar to English. There's a lot of loan words in both the languages. English has Norman roots, so there are a lot of English words that are very similar to the French words, or you can kind of see how they may have morphed from French words. So I've really been trying to use an even more basic technique of morphing the English vocabulary I have to the French words, which I found very successful too. But I think it's the same kind of idea that instead of just staring at a word and hopefully it's going to stick, you look for something to kind of link it in together with the rest of the things that you know. And I think you have a really inventive and imaginative method for doing that.
Yeah, and the thing is, a lot of people, when they hear about this, they think, well, yeah, but I don't have that kind of imagination. I remember I have been a French teacher in the past, and I tried to help some of my students to remember some French words like this. And I said, okay, now you try. And when they try, they can never think of something as imaginative as the examples I've given. And it is something that you can learn. And it's actually a lot of fun, because when we're children, we have amazing imaginations for playing and all of these stories we come up with. And we lose this as we're an adult and we get more practical about the world and everything. And this has actually brought a little bit of childhood back into my life, and it makes my world more interesting because I'm always imagining all these crazy stories going all around me and new items that I'm learning. And now I'm definitely not the only one. I don't remember the link right now. I can give it to you later. There's a guy who catalogs mnemonics for these kind of stories for learning new vocabulary. He does it for a couple of languages, French, Spanish, Italian, and you can search for a word you're trying to remember, and he gives a couple of 100 examples for each language, and you can see if you want to remember this word, you've got this story with it, and that's great for some inspiration for people, some ideas to get them started on this path.
Exactly. All right, one thing, you've talked a lot about your philosophy and maybe even some of the tactics, but now I want to talk about some of the practical obstacles that people face. What, in your opinion, from doing this process multiple times, going through it for yourself, being the best real-life example of your strategy and practice, what do you feel is the biggest obstacle people face when learning languages that keeps them from really, really hitting their stride and becoming fluent in it?
Yeah, I think one of the most, the biggest obstacles for me and definitely for your readers and listeners is that we're English speakers. And this is a huge problem. And you will meet a lot of polyglots. I've met a lot of Europeans who speak several languages, who speak four or five languages. In Europe, this is not actually that big a deal. And I met lots of Indians who speak almost a dozen languages, and they're very different languages from each other. But the thing is, as English speakers, it's not that we're less talented than them. It's the fact that because English is currently the most popular language to study in the world, people are always, when you're abroad, people are very happy to take the opportunity to practice. And, you know, that's great if you're a tourist and you're just going through a country briefly. But I found that the kind of negative aspect of this is when I was in Spain and I decided to take on that 30-day mission, I actually lost several friends, several Spanish friends, and I could see that they were actually kind of just using me. They were just using me to practice their English, because getting English lessons abroad can be very expensive. So a huge obstacle I found is that some people just want to always speak English with me, not just native speakers. Obviously, if I meet other travelers who are just going through a country very briefly, they're not interested in learning the language, just they want to take pictures and relax and whatever. So that's a big obstacle if you meet other foreigners. But also the locals can be not so enthusiastic depending on where you go. You know, here in Brazil, it's fine. Brazilians are very happy to speak Portuguese with you. But I found when I was living in Paris that they had very, very little patience with my level of French at that stage. And whenever I started speaking in French, they would answer me back in English. And it's not just the dominance of them speaking English. It's also it hurts your ego because, you know, you're starting off in the language and it's like them insulting you and telling you, no, your level's pathetic. I'm not interested in speaking my language with you. Let's just speak in English. So that's definitely the biggest challenge that I've had in the last few years. But I found ways around that. I found ways of convincing locals to speak to me in their language. And I've developed a kind of dislike for the English language. It's kind of my way of getting around the problem is whenever somebody speaks to me in English, I kind of, you know, I tell them, oh, no, listen, English is my least favorite language. I don't want to speak it. It's boring. I want to speak this language. So I've kind of got this this negative view of English in my mind, which has positively helped me learning languages. And I've found ways to convince locals to speak to me in their language. Like my blog, for example, has my own story. I try to tell them here in Brazil, I've got my way that I'm trying to become Brazilian. Maybe you can help me. And I compliment them on how much I love their language and so on. So that's the biggest obstacle. Just starting to think other ones would be just trying to just sticking to your commitments, because in the early stages there is that temptation to just speak in English. And I've met people who've lived in countries for, I actually met a guy in Prague who is married and has children. He's been living in Prague for 10 years. And after just 2 weeks, I was speaking better Czech than him. And this did not make me feel smart. This made me feel sorry for him because he was just so uncommitted, because his whole circle, his whole social circle was purely English. So there's a lot of challenges. It's definitely not easy. Like when I say anyone can do the fluent in 3 months experiment, I don't mean anyone in terms of it's that easy. I mean anyone can do it if they're committed enough, and it's you have to make a lot of sacrifices if you want to learn a foreign language, but the benefits are so much worth it.
Exactly. Well, I think another thing that you talked about, we've had discussion about before, is what's your feeling on some people, and you've talked about before that you really feel the active method, getting out there, meeting people, speaking the language, or at least if you're getting some input, it's in a practical way, it's so that the language is alive for you. But I think a lot of my readers are thinking right now, well, you know what, that's great for Benny. Benny is an extrovert, he's a crazy guy, he has crazy pictures of himself up on his website next to each of the articles. He's clearly an outgoing, sociable guy. What's your response to those people who say, you know what, I'm just not extroverted enough, I'm too shy to really take advantage of your method?
All right, well, this is another thing that people can just learn. I definitely don't think being an extrovert or an introvert is genetic. It's not built into you. It's something that you can learn. And I can tell you that when I was 20, when I went to Spain, I was extremely shy. I had studied in an all-boys school until university, and I did one of the most difficult courses in university, so I was studying the entire time, and I think I only went out about 3 or 4 times a year. I mean, it was barely a university life. So when I graduated, I was very, very introvert and shy, and there's no way I would approach a stranger and start a conversation with them. But in general, in the last few years, I've learned that there's through other people that I've met, yourself, Brad from 30 Sleeps. Mm-hmm. I quite like his method of social skydiving, where he says you just have to. It's something you can learn. Just you have another 30 day project as you're talking about, where you just force yourself to speak to as many people as possible, as many strangers as you can, and you learn that it's not that big a deal if somebody, people aren't going to bite your head off. You know, you walk up to them and you say, hey, how are you doing? You spark up a conversation, and worst case scenario, they they don't respond or they look at you weird, and you just go on to the next guy. It's simple as that. It's a process that it does take a while. It's not. I don't think. You know, you could start from somebody extremely shy and then become fluent in 3 months in a language, because you have to. This is one of my things. I kind of presume people are a little bit extrovert in if they're going to be trying this. So I suppose it does involve some prerequisites when if you're taking on this intensive mission, because you do have to be very open. You have to be willing to talk to lots of people. You have to look at yourself less seriously and don't worry about making mistakes. So I wouldn't be an expert in terms of explaining how to reach this stage, but in general it's just something that you can practice. You just have to get out of the house and talk to as many people as possible. And there's another reason why I have a strong contrast with the pure input language learning people who, as you say, have commented negatively against me, is that they're kind of embracing their shyness. They're just staying in their house, listening to their audio courses on their iPod, and you know, reading lots of the foreign language through websites and whatever. But they're this is kind of accepting the fact that they're too shy to get out and talk to people. You have to do that. It's a necessary step if you want to be able to speak a language. You have to actually speak it. You have to get out there and talk to people. So I can't really give such good advice explaining on how to reach that stage, but there's a lot of good material, you know, a couple of really good self-help books that people can get through, and lots of great resources online through blog posts explaining, helping people to change from an introvert to an extrovert. It's definitely something that you can learn, and it's something that I've learned. I was very, very shy when I was 20, and now I'm much more extrovert. It's a process that anyone can go through.
I just wanted to mention, because you brought it up, my friend Brad Ballenbach, or our friend Brad Ballenbach, writes at 30sleeps.com, and you can go there, and he's busy in a new startup venture, so he doesn't post as frequently now, but his archives are gold. There's tons of great articles on improving social success, and what I really like about his attitude is it kind of reflects yours and my attitude, which is less is kind of maybe in some cases more manipulative, like go out and try to, like, you know, trick people into liking you. His is very genuine, very upfront. He calls it social skydiving. I think a lot of people get some value out of it if they haven't heard of him from before. So moving on to another big point, which is, I think, maybe a manifestation of your combination of the social and also the language learning. When you went to your goal to learn Brazilian Portuguese, it wasn't just to learn Brazilian Portuguese, particularly not in the academic, only scripted YouTube video fashion, but you wanted people to actually think that you are Brazilian, so that when they meet you in a conversation, they don't think this is some guy from Ireland speaking Portuguese. This is a Brazilian. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that goal. What kind of triggered that goal in your mind, and maybe some of the steps you've taken beyond your initial language learning process to really make that happen?
Okay, so one of the most important parts of this mission for me is that it is a very, very high goal to reach. It's a very difficult thing. So the way I look at it is, if I work really, really hard and I still don't make it to that stage where Brazilians think that I'm Brazilian, in working so hard, I'm going to hugely improve my Portuguese. And it was the same when I tried to learn Czech to fluency in 3 months. It turned out my last month I couldn't continue the experiment because I had financial problems and I had to work double time. But it's still, because I was aiming for such a high goal, after the 2 months, I reached conversational Czech, which is an amazing achievement. So if you aim for something really, really high, even if you don't reach it, you're going to be landing on an impressive goal anyway. Now, in terms of what I'm trying here, what I want to do is exactly what you said. I want to basically have it doesn't have to be for hours, or I don't want to convince anyone in academia that I'm a Brazilian. I just want to meet some stranger or talk to him for a minute or two, and I want that after that 1 or 2 minutes that he still thinks that I'm Brazilian. until I mess up on some mistake or until I happen to mention that I'm from Ireland. And now I can gladly say that yesterday for the first time somebody did think that I was Brazilian. I was only talking to them for about 30 seconds, but I was kind of talking to lots of people and I went away. And then when I came back, the guy said that he was talking to my friends and he was very surprised to hear that I was Irish, because up to that point he thought that I was Brazilian. So I'm very, very pleased that I, you know, even if I don't hear from other people, that at least I've convinced that one person. I've still got 2 more weeks here, so I'm going to try and see what I can do. So it's very, very different, the process. I've learned so much in the last last 2.5 months. And this is why I'm writing my blog and everything, is because I'm still learning. You know, as you said in your last blog post, you know, we're not experts. It's we're all learning about things. So this is I've learned so much. I'm not saying that I know exactly how to learn any language very quickly. And so, for example, the kind of things I've learned include that each language has its own music. And this is extremely important if you want to reduce your accent. And that us English speakers have a preference for consonants rather than vowels. So when we speak a foreign language, we tend to eat non-stressed vowels. And this is a very typical thing of an English-speaking accent. And you've got particular letters. The letter R is the most important letter anyone should work on. Is rolling their R or making it more guttural if it's in French, for example. So I already had a pretty good pronunciation. So I was working more on my music and then on making my language, ironically, even less academic. Like, my Portuguese was already, not so formal, because I've never taken a class of Portuguese. I've learned it all in parties and whatever here. But I've gone a step further because I had studied a little bit by myself with books, but now I'm getting rid of all of that and trying to make it even more informal. So, you know, equivalents in English would be like saying things like ain't, you know, things like that that are not proper English, but that a particular group of people would happen to speak like that. And learning lots of slang and cursing, these kind of things are very important for making yourself sound natural, because language learners tend to sound very formal. We use the words that our books tell us, or the translations, rather than the actual words that people say. Like, you know, in French, for example, the word for job or work is travail. But mm-hmm. people in the street would actually tend to say boulot. And it's, you know, it's less formal. It's a different social level. You wouldn't use it in a job interview or something.
Exactly.
These are the kind of equivalent things in Portuguese that I'm working on. And then after that, that's just the linguistic aspect. When you're speaking a foreign language, it's not just the language. It's your body language. It's your clothes. It's your posture, your facial expression. And not just how you say things, but exactly what you're saying. That has the cultural aspect to it. The way you're talking about particular things and the passion you have for them. And these are the kind of things I've been trying to observe and compare between Brazilians and foreigners, and trying to emulate as a Brazilian. And I've still got a long way to go. And, you know, if I can convince just a couple of more people, if I can confirm it, that it's definitely true, they're not just saying it to make me feel good, other people genuinely believe that I'm Brazilian, I'd be very, very pleased with what I've achieved in the last few months. But even if that doesn't happen anymore, people have told me that in the last 2.5 months, my Portuguese has exploded in perfectionism, that I've got such a good accent on it now. I'm saying things so much more naturally, and they're more comfortable to speak with me. This is, for me, it's so much more important with speaking a foreign language. You're not just asking a question, getting an answer. You know, it's the communication goes beyond that. You need to have relationships with people. And when you speak with a strong accent and you're speaking it too formally, this creates a little bit of a distance between people. Whereas if you can put yourself on the same level as them, using the same kind of street vocabulary they would, they can open themselves up to you so much. And I've learned so much about Brazilian culture in trying to actually imitate them and be one of them and be inside of their groups. And they say things to me that they wouldn't say to foreigners normally. Like I discovered, for example, Brazilians love taking the piss out of their friends, you know, just lightheartedly mocking them, saying that they're an idiot, but doing it in such a way that if your level of the language was a little bit lower, you would get offended, you know. Mm-hmm. So people are doing this. I'm actually pleased that I'm getting insulted a lot from my friends, and I can see from the way they're doing it with each other, for example, as a macho culture, they call each other gay as an insult, and it's mm-hmm. all of these really funny things that I kind of feel pleased about, because it makes me feel a lot closer to them, and they appreciate it so much. And it's, as I said before, it's the snowball effect. The passion that I've shown them in trying to learn Portuguese has encouraged them to help me and correct me and tell me what I'm doing wrong, and it's been an absolutely amazing experience, and I definitely plan to do it in the other languages that I would speak fluently, like French and Spanish. I do want to reach the stage where a local would think that I'm one of them, even if it's just for a minute, you know, because people would counter that, telling me, no, you need a whole lifetime to speak with no accent and to be exactly like a native. But I'm not aiming for that. I'm being really realistic. I'm not going to reach the stage in the next few years where I can spend all day long with somebody talking to them and they'll still think that I'm from mm-hmm. the same city as them. You know, I'm being realistic, but I'm still aiming for the stars, and if I land on the moon, then that's great still, you know?
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I think you brought up an important point earlier in your talk, just about how you and I, especially not me, we're not experts. I don't even know what the word expert means. I think that the real benefit of this conversation, at least for me, is that you're actually living this. This is your story, and you have something that a lot of people can aspire to. I know that maybe there's some other language learning blogs where someone can speak something a little bit better and criticize you, but you're actually out there doing it, learning 8 languages, and living across different cultures, immersing yourself. So I think that you're probably the closest thing that many people can find, maybe to an expert, but at the very least to a story that they can attach to. And I definitely have learned a lot in this phone interview. I hope that the readers who are listening to this right now are getting some value out of this. I know I'm probably going to have to listen to this again and take notes, because I'm going to have to do a lot of these things with my own language learning. So I wanted to thank you very much for coming on and helping me out with this audio recording. You're definitely an interesting guy. I wanted to direct everybody to your website. It's fluentin3months.com. That's FLUENTIN 3, the number 3, MONTHS.com. It is a fantastic website where you basically tell your story of how you're learning all these languages. So if you're thinking about maybe becoming bilingual or even just mastering a language that you're already learning, you definitely have a lot to share.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the interview. It's been very interesting, and I've learned a lot from you as well, from our previous conversation and from your own blog posts. So I'd definitely be interested in collaborating more in future with you.
Thank you. All right.